unspoken secret in coffee in a lot of situations is that the coffee that you're tasting in the supermarket specifically is weeks, if not months old. You know, between the land, the amount of rain, the amount of sun, the altitude, the way they harvest, when they harvest, how they process, how you roast. There's so many different variables that can manipulate the taste of coffee. I set it up to be Bitcoin only. And as a result of that, I've probably missed out on, you know, thousands of dollars of fiat sales. But it was more kind of a flag that I wanted to plant in the ground and just say, look, this is going to be a Bitcoin-only company. From a business standpoint, there's a lot less headache as well, because once the transaction comes across, it's final. Start small, fail fast, and go from there. But know that it's a long-term play, right? But to be in Bitcoin, you have to have a low time preference.
Welcome to another episode of Stacking Sats. Today's episode features the Satoshi Coffee Company, which has stacked millions of sats for their line of fresh roasted coffee. Before we get into the episode, today's show is sponsored by Stackwork. Stackwork is a lightning-powered transcription tool that takes the best of AI and humans to create better, faster, less expensive transcripts. Today's show is also sponsored by Nodeless. Nodeless makes it easy to accept Bitcoin payments in your store or website with instant and automatic withdrawals sent directly to your cold storage. If you want to learn more about Stackwork and Nodeless, click the links in the description. Sats Coffee, thank you for taking the time to chat about your business, Satoshi Coffee Company. Before we get into what you're building, can we start with a background, kind of give listeners some perspective on your life prior to Bitcoin and prior to founding Satoshi Coffee?
Okay. Yeah, absolutely. Grew up in the Midwest, lived a little bit of time in the California Bay Area, Boston area, and now I'm in the Southeast. Always been in sales and marketing for the most part of my life. Do photography as a commercial hobby business as well. And started up Sats Coffee about a year and a half ago. My Bitcoin story kind of happened in 2015. When it was very much a fiat minded, you know, this is a stock going to the moon type of a mindset. The typical, you know, buy some, watch it go up and maybe sell a little bit and get back to your cost basis, you know, at a lower rate. The more I studied it, I thought, oh, this is cool, but there's all these other coins, you know, took the detour into all the other altcoins. And then I joined a former coworker of mine who really had a really tough conversation with me to say, look, what are these other coins really doing? And at that point, I decided to go in on studying Bitcoin. I still held the other coins, but you know, I took a couple courses that were very technically aligned. One was, I think, by Coursera, University of Pennsylvania Bitcoin course, which I highly recommend. Got into a bunch of details. And after about, you know, the typical, you know, several hundred or thousand hours or whatever of listening to podcasts and doing my research, I dumped everything else. So that's kind of my Bitcoin story, my background.
And so when you started Satoshi Coffee, this was already, you were already way down the Bitcoin rabbit hole and convinced, is that right? Is this, and it started out as a, you know, accepting Bitcoin?
Yeah, absolutely. I went to Bitcoin 2022 and the goal there was actually to get a Bitcoin job. I actually signed up with another business that I own as the industry partner and went there an extra day. And as you can imagine, everybody was handing out resumes. So that didn't happen. And I applied several other times to other, you know, Bitcoin companies, and that didn't happen. So about 2 or 3 months after the conference, I thought, you know what, I'm just going to do this. I have a passion for coffee and I have a passion for Bitcoin. So let's marry these two together and, you know, look at how you can generate some non-KYC sats. So that's the genesis of how it started.
I want to hear more about coffee because I'm coming at this from a very inexperienced, I have actually never had coffee in my life. So you're going to have to walk me through this process. I want to understand more about the coffee you sell, what makes it special and unique from some of the other blends you might find.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's funny because I came into coffee much like you, where I went through college and even in the first part of my professional career without ever consuming a cup, other than maybe at, like, you know, my grandmother's house during Christmas, right? When it was old Folgers, overbrewed, way too hot, and just, you know, tasted horrible. So I stayed away from it. But my father-in-law, he drinks coffee pretty much nonstop. And so when I got engaged and got married, I realized quickly that I was going to have to supply this guy with coffee. So I have a tendency to go deep in rabbit holes. And so I was living in San Jose at the time. I ended up going to this roaster and basically went up to the coffee bar and just said, I want to start coffee and I'd like one. And they're like, well, what do you like? And I said, I don't know. And so just like you, I was like, let me look into this. And so he had three little Demitasse cups. And he said, basically, this one's going to taste like earthy. This one's going to taste chocolatey. And this one's going to taste citrusy. And being from the Midwest and being out in the Bay Area, my wife and I had really gotten into the wine scene to understand, you know, just a lot about wine. And so there's a lot of similarities with that. So when I tasted each cup, just like the barista had told me, each one had nuances that were representative of what he said. And so at that point, I basically ruined my entire rest of my life because the coffees that I had to have were, one had to be fresh roasted, two had to have unbelievably flavor, you know, high flavors and just taste great. So that's what started me in the rabbit hole, you know, probably around 2005 or six, somewhere around there. But the process for coffee is very much like wine. And I've talked with Ben Justman quite a bit about that early on, because I know he's been on your podcast and have talked about it. But, you know, between the land, the amount of rain, the amount of sun, the altitude, the way they harvest, when they harvest, how they process, how you roast, there's so many different variables that can manipulate the taste of coffee to give it nuances that are either, you know, in alignment with their terroir, where, you know, where they're actually grown, or to try to put something different in, which is kind of what some of the major coffee companies, the large ones, do, because they buy low quality beans and they typically over roast. So instead of getting the nuance of the bean, they end up getting a more of a charred flavor. And that's kind of what most people understand coffee to be. So what I offer, you asked about my products specifically, I started out roasting myself, and I just had a fluid roaster. I'd been roasting since California. There's a great company that is out there, Sweet Maria's Coffee Company, and they provide green beans. They provide a bunch of tips, guides, things like that. But it was literally a popcorn popper on the stovetop, and you would crank this thing around, and the green beans basically go through about three or four major changes while you're doing that. And that's the roasting process itself. So I learned it way back when I eventually moved to North Carolina. I started roasting myself and giving it to neighbors and selling it a little bit. And at some point when I started the company, it was too much. And so I ended up finding a roaster that's somewhat nearby, and visited their site, talked with their head roaster, talked with the owner, and really found something that I would be happy with putting my name on, or at least Satoshi's name. And so with that, we're fresh roasted. We have unbelievable quality of green beans that start out from the suppliers in a good position. And we ship very quickly. So the unspoken secret in coffee in a lot of situations is that the coffee that you're tasting in the supermarket specifically is weeks, if not months old. During that time, especially with ground coffee, you lose a lot of the flavor profile. With beans, it's not as evident, but you still lose quite a bit over time. And so the goal really is to get the freshest beans to the customers paid in Bitcoin as soon as we can.
Now, you mentioned green beans. I'm not familiar with how the actual beans are grown in a coffee plant. Can you elaborate on that, how that works?
Yeah. At the coffee farms, what they have is coffee trees, coffee bushes. Basically, what ends up happening is that they produce cherries. They're very similar to the cherry you can imagine, right? Those are hand-picked, and the pulp of the cherry is discarded. The way that you can do that is a bunch of different ways. You can do wet processing. You can do honey process, which is what our El Salvador blend or our El Salvador beans have. But basically what you're trying to do is get rid of all the pulp that's around the seed or the bean of the coffee of the coffee fruit itself. Once you have the bean, then you need to dry everything out. And, you know, there's a bunch of different methods to do that, whether it's on an elevated terrace, whether it's on literally a patio. But you need to get it in such a way that you can ship it and make sure that mold doesn't grow on the bean, et cetera, whenever you're doing this. You're still going to roast it at, you know, 400 degrees plus Fahrenheit. So it's something that, you know, even if there is something there, it's pretty low probability of getting to the consumer. But our suppliers are very high quality. And, you know, there's some spin, definitely some marketing spin in the coffee industry talking about coffees that are organically grown, which is interesting. I'd like to touch on that at some point, just to kind of run through that. It's also talking about coffees that are guaranteed not to have any type of bacteria or fungus in them. And again, you know, we can talk about that as well. But at the end of the day, you get coffee beans that are considered green beans. They don't smell great, and they need to be roasted. So the way that you do that is you apply heat to the bean itself, and you drive off moisture. Then you start to go through a process where you're starting to, you know, make the beans. They kind of smell like almost like baked bread, just a little bit. But they're releasing carbon dioxide at that point. And then you go through the process where you start to develop the beans a little bit in a caramelization process. So you're getting them to a point where they're nice and dry and crunchy, so you can kind of crunch it in your hand. But at the same time, you don't want to over roast it, because then you get to the charred situation like we talked about earlier. So there's definitely a happy medium where beans need to be roasted, in my opinion. But that's what, you know, that's going to be up to the individual in terms of what they like to consume. So we actually just launched a dark roasted for some of our partners that we're working with as well on our loyalty program. So
let's get into some of those finer points you made about, you know, things, maybe an organic label or things consumers should be looking for or looking to avoid or kind of ignoring. What are those things in the coffee industry that most consumers may see on a package but don't really know what they mean?
Yeah, just kind of like getting out and shaking your rancher's hand with, you know, Texas Slim and so on, and the Beef Initiative. It's the same thing with coffee, right? You want to go somewhere where you can actually, you know, shake your roaster's hand in a lot of different ways. And what I mean by that is that, you know, by knowing where they're roasting, you can do a little bit more background check. You can get through the process. Unfortunately, there's not a whole lot of smaller roasters that are out there because they've been consumed by a lot of the larger companies. And so we're probably the closest thing to that, just because it's, you know, within days, if not, you know, a couple of weeks by the time our customers get the product that they're able to taste a freshly roast bag. With that being said, I think where's the bean from, first of all? And ideally, if you can know the farm itself, you can do your own research and find out, you know, what's the farm's all about. Our El Salvador farm, they use a bio-organic situation. They're not certified organic. But at the end of the day, most of these coffee farms are in a position where it's cheaper to actually hire people to go out and pick bugs off of the plants, or to do weeding manually, because of the cost of pesticides, first of all, is so high. And then second of all, if they do that, and they, if they were ever to have their coffee plants die, it would be, you know, just detrimental for their entire family in the surrounding area. So they're very particular in terms of taking care of their plants. And like I said, more of it's a marketing spin than anything. There's a lot of different ways to then prepare your beans once you get them. But, you know, I think the one thing, if you do find a roaster that you like, whether it's nearby or whatever, but to have an actual date that is roasted by, I think that's important. So then that way you can see, you know, when that is. We chose to use Bitcoin block dates as a result of that. So It's kind of cool, because there's that nuance. You can go to, you know, the mempool.space and look up the block itself and find out when it was actually found on the chain. So it's just kind of one way to do a little bit of proof of work.
Have you been able to go out to El Salvador? I know you have a few different locations, right? You have, I think, an El Salvador coffee, and maybe it was Ethiopia, or I think you might have a few. Have you been able to go out to those farms and actually see the growing process?
It's in place in April, so I will be going down to the halving event down there by the Meme Factory. So that'll be fun, and I'm actually working right now with the farm locally in our roaster here to coordinate that. So that'll be a lot of fun. I have visited farms when we lived on the West Coast. We went to Hawaii multiple times, and one time my wife and I did a coffee crawl. So we lined up about three or four farms and just went from one to another. Took the tour, talked to the owners. Did some tastings, and it was an amazing experience. Actually bought some green beans and roasted them back in the Bay Area. And they have some unbelievable coffees out there as well.
You mentioned marrying coffee and Bitcoin. These are two passions, and you wanted to bring them together. Why is it important that Bitcoin is involved here? Why not just create a coffee company and then do Bitcoin on the side? Why do they have to be together?
Together, yeah. That was a strategic decision that I made, because whenever I set up the company, I set it up to be Bitcoin only. And as a result of that, I've probably missed out on you know, thousands of dollars of fiat sales. But it was more kind of a flag that I wanted to plant in the ground and just say, look, this is going to be a Bitcoin only company. And that's going to be our foundation. The reason, obviously, Bitcoin, because I had been down the rabbit hole. It's the best currency out there on Earth. It's the hardest, you know, most divisible, easy to use, easy to spend. I use BTC Pay Server, which we can get into a little bit if you'd like to, in terms of the actual the stack itself. But at the end of the day, you know, there's always the mantra that you couldn't buy coffee with Bitcoin, right? And part of it was kind of to prove that incorrectly, to say, look, you can buy coffee with Bitcoin. You can buy unbelievably high quality coffee with Bitcoin, and you know, here's what we're going to do. So it took a lot of effort in the sense of taking a standard WordPress template that I use on my website, and through ChatGPT, I was able to ask a bunch of questions on how do I convert US dollars to Satoshis. And as a result of that, I only display my prices in sats, which is nice because obviously right now I'm working on getting the coffee suppliers to interact with Bitcoin and you know, be able to buy beans that way. But in the current situation, I'm tied to paying fiat for my supplies. So it allows me as a business owner to be able to manage my inventory and my costs from a fiat standpoint on the back end. But then to the consumer, we're able to actually display sats, which is cool. The only thing I can't fix yet is taxes and shipping. Those for whatever reason won't go over to sats. But anyway, that's it. But it's been fun.
That's very cool. So you're displaying prices in sats. You're only accepting Bitcoin, and then you're also putting the latest the block mined when the beans were roasted on your label. Correct?
Yep.
Very cool. I want to get into the tools that you're using to run the business. So you mentioned BTC Pay Server. Are there any other tools and WordPress? Are there any other tools that you use as a business owner to manage the entire operation?
Yeah, sure, for sure. The BTC Pay Server is actually hosted by Luninode, and they have an unbelievable plug and play. It's like a one-stop shop to fully deploy BTC Pay Server. And then from there, it's up to you to customize it and make it your own. It's not 100% self-sovereign because of that, but it's got an unbelievable high uptime, and it was the easiest thing to do to get it up and running, and it's been extremely reliable. So highly recommend those two. You mentioned WordPress. I use WooCommerce as my point of sale plugin, and then the BTC Pay Server has a plugin as well. They've got a lot of different features that they have added, especially in the past 6 to 12 months. Just for an example, I did a PayJoin plugin now. So if anybody wants to buy somewhat pseudonymously, with a little bit less chain analysis, they can do a coin join, pay join rather on chain if they want to do that. And so that's really about it. In terms of liquidity, I'm getting some through LNBig, from CoinSep, from BitRefill. I know Voltage does a really nice job on that as well. I know there's others, but I think that's one of the biggest things. Once you set everything up, you need to have inbound liquidity, or else you can't accept payments. So there was a little bit of a learning on that side of it. I run my own node on the side, but doing it from a business standpoint, you're talking about a lot more breadth and throughput, right? So had to get the meaty nodes up and running and set meaty channels. And so they helped out with that. Last but not least, I mean, really, I think the biggest key is Twitter as a tool, or X right now. It's been interesting because since Elon took over, I've actually seen a decrease in orders from them specifically. So I've moved over quite a bit. I moved over to Noster back in December. So I've been on for, you know, almost a year now, not quite. But with that being said, it's harder because they don't have the algorithm to put products in front of potential customers like Twitter did before Elon took over. And I refused to get the blue check, hat tip to Kevin O'Dell and Marty Bent. So it's one of those things that from a pseudonymous standpoint, I'd rather just kind of stay as is with everything that I'm at. And that's one of the reasons too, you asked earlier about why I decided to start a Bitcoin only company. It's a nice way to get at least KYC sats. In my situation, I've chosen to, you know, go the legal route. So I pay taxes and everything else on my income. But I know there are some that choose to do that without reporting and, you know, do your own research. I'm not an accountant. I'm not going to provide, suggestions, but that is one reason why it is good to do your own stack as well from a commercial standpoint.
Now, for anyone listening to this, thinking to themselves, you know, I want to start a business and sell something and, you know, earn some KYC-free sats. What are some of the other challenges that you face? You mentioned inbound liquidity. Any other challenges that you faced in setting up the business?
You know, I think the biggest thing is one, finding the right product, right? And it seems like there's been kind of a Cambrian explosion of a lot of products out there now that, you know, everything from Frida cinnamon rolls to steaks you can get. I mean, and with Oshi, you can get just a ton of different products out there. You can get wine from Ben, obviously. And it seems like everybody's kind of figuring out that, you know, this is something you can do. And it's not that difficult to do. Worst case scenario, you use just a standard wallet like Phoenix or Moon and just do things manually. So one, you have to have a good product, something that somebody's going to demand. And that's just kind of like business 101. But the other piece is just start small and just scale from there. You know, I think when I started a year and a half ago, I had a goal in mind to, you know, make a certain amount. And, you know, after about 3 or 4 months, I blew through that goal. So it continues to grow on itself. And especially the biggest key is just making sure you're providing great customer service. You're providing a great product. And at the end of the day, the word of mouth has been my biggest form of advertisement, to be honest with you.
Now, I want to talk about Bitcoin's circular economy and your strategy to be a Bitcoin-only business. Because you mentioned earlier that you're probably leaving thousands of dollars on the table by not taking a fiat approach. Why is it important to you that you're helping build this Bitcoin circular economy? Why is that rather than, you know, taking the fiat approach, earning potentially more, converting that into Bitcoin? Why have you taken this route?
Like I said, it was more strategic than anything to kind of, you know, more than anything, prove a point is that you could be a Bitcoin only company. And, you know, full disclosure, this isn't my, you know, full-time job. At some point I hope to grow to that, but at the end of the day, it was something to say like, you know, look, you can just do this and not have to worry about it. From a business standpoint, there's a lot less headache as well, because once the transaction comes across, it's final, right? And so there's no chargebacks. I know talking to Mopar Mining and the folks down there, you know, they get chargebacks all the time. And sometimes it's hundreds of dollars that they're shipping internationally. Somebody disputes it on their credit card and they're stuck with the bill. So that was one reason as well to say, I just don't even want to deal with that. And then the last piece is just the fact that there's not a huge margin in coffee, especially as a coffee reseller. And so as a result of that, to right off the bat, cut out 3% of margin didn't make a whole lot of sense. So between, you know, more the strategic kind of like, you know, I just want to do this because I can. And then all the other reasons from an economic and just logistical standpoint, that's why I decided to do Bitcoin only.
What can other businesses do to, maybe these are Bitcoin businesses, maybe they're fiat businesses who are excited about Bitcoin and want to integrate it further. What can these businesses do to enhance Bitcoin's circular economy, to get it spinning faster and faster?
Yeah, number one, use Bitcoin. That's the biggest key, right? Because I think it's, and this is something that, you know, Lynn Alden and some of the other, you know, macro economists would probably argue either way. And you know, I've been trying to follow this, but you know, you've got different money supplies of fiat, right? And there's value in having movement of the money supply and having you know, liquidity and things that are moving through the system at a decent rate. I feel strongly that Bitcoin's like that as well, because if there's no perceived value, then it's difficult to value Bitcoin, if that makes sense. So if everybody just hodled and that was it, then at that point, you're basically trying to entice new people to come into the space, learn Bitcoin, and then go through it, the whole process to acquire, and that's going to be your demand, right? But the supply is obviously it's on a schedule that's calculated. It's not going to change, but there's not going to be any supply from the hodlers. Versus in a circular economy, at least from where I'm looking, one, it gets you a chance to teach people about Bitcoin. I know my daughter has had a little stand selling, you know, lemonade, and I put Bitcoin out and say it's accepted, and she's got a little QR code that goes into her wallet. And so, you know, it's one of those things that they just kind of look at it. I know Ben does the same thing in his farmers markets, but it's promoting that concept of, hey, you can interact with Bitcoin. Obviously there's tax implications with that. And, you know, I think there's like Satoshi Pacholi, Joe Wood does a really nice job for Bitcoin companies. Shout out to him. I use him for my taxes. He understands Bitcoin. He's a Bitcoiner and does a really nice job on taxes as well. So Talk to your accountant, see how you can do that. But ideally, to your point, you can take fiat, transfer it into Bitcoin, and then use it in the Bitcoin economy. The other thing too is just reach out to people, because I think that's one thing between, you know, we've got about 12 to 15 people that I interact with on an almost daily basis that have gone through the exact steps required to get a business up and running on the Bitcoin standard. And so why try to reinvent the wheel? Reach out to them and let them tell you what's made them successful and how they can be a help in the future, whether it's co-marketing, even buying product, trading product, whatever it may be. But that's really about it.
What are the reactions people have? Because you're a Bitcoin only business. There's various forms, and most businesses will accept Bitcoin, but also accept dollars, or sometimes dollars and then just convert into Bitcoin on the back end. What are the reactions that you've seen from people, maybe people outside of your kind of Twitter word of mouth? Because you said that was a big driver, and I imagine a lot of those are Bitcoiners, but has anyone come up to you who has not been a Bitcoiner, and you know, what is that like in trying to explain to them that you're only accepting Bitcoin for this coffee?
Yeah, it is. It's difficult, especially at the lemonade stand when a bunch of normies from the neighborhood are coming by and saying, "What's Bitcoin? Isn't that a scam? Isn't that a Ponzi or whatever?" So, if nothing else, it gives you a chance to kind of run through Bitcoin at a high level, ask them a lot of questions to figure out why they think. First of all, what do they think about it, and why do they think that? But a lot of times, as we know, they don't understand monetary system, you know, to begin with. So if nothing else, it brings an opportunity to talk about that. What I'll typically do if somebody wants to buy in Bitcoin is I will have them download a, you know, Moon or Phoenix or one of the easy wallets, which reminds me, by the way, I do use Zeus as my Lightning node management wallet. And Evan and the team there has done a fantastic job of getting it up and running. They just got a new beta out coming that you know, basically is looking at having your own node on your phone, which is unbelievable. So anyway, but that being said, I'll have them download a wallet real quickly, and then I'll send them some sats. I'll accept the money back in fiat, but then I'll make them pay in Bitcoin and then give them a bag. So it's definitely a not the most efficient route, but it gets them to see the Lightning Network specifically, how quick it can be. And at that point, it's, you know, it's just more than anything, it's just kind of a little bit of a novelty to them, but they can tell everybody else, "Hey, I bought this in Bitcoin." And the next thing you know, there's more buzz being generated, and hopefully the economy continues to grow.
Now, I know Ben Justman, who you brought up earlier, he was on one of the earlier episodes of this series. He, I believe, sells at farmers markets. Do you do any in-person sales for the coffee in addition to the online sales? And if so, what is that? Is there a mixture or a difference in the way that people perceive Bitcoin, whether it's online or in person? Is it harder to sell one or the other?
Yeah, I haven't done the farmers markets yet. The one thing I do sell Bitcoin at is the local meetup. We've got the Raleigh Bitcoin meetup. Actually, it was started by Jameson Lopp, I believe. And it's, I think, the oldest meetup that's been running continuously in the world. So Steve runs it now. He does a really nice job. He's he does UXTO Live. And so there's a lot of knowledge there and a lot of Bitcoiners. So that's usually where I sell at this point. So
when you think about the next step for this business, you mentioned you wanted to grow it. Is this something you foresee becoming a full-time job? And if so, how do you get outside of the kind of like hardcore Bitcoiners that you've maybe spoken to so far on Twitter or either in person? How do you grow that market? How do you get the people who have not yet appreciated Bitcoin or understood it?
The way I'm going to grow the business, I've really got kind of three main areas this year. Number one, we're starting a loyalty program. So the more sats you spend over the longer period of time, the more I'm going to give you back in terms of rebate via sats. And so there's three levels. The first level is 4.20 percent back in sats. If you decide to continue going and you end up purchasing 690,000 sats, then at that point you can get 6.9% back in sats. And if you want to, you can continue then at that point if you don't receive the rebate. And ultimately, if you spend 2.1 million sats with me, you will be able to receive 21% back in Satoshis, which is substantial, right? If you do the current math, you know, back of the napkin, I think you'd have to spend about $600 in coffee, which for most people is going to be 2 or 3 or 4 years, depending on how much you drink. But current prices, you're going to get 150 bucks back or so, something around that amount. So that's going to be very similar with your fiat coffee that you buy at the grocery store in terms of pricing. So that's one way. The second way is working with Bitcoin only companies. For example, we have a partnership with Crowd Health, which is an unbelievable company. I met Andy, the CEO, a couple weeks ago live, and he's done a nice job. But they send a bag of coffee to each one of their members on their birthday month. And so at that point, it's just a nice little gesture that they do for their members that's Bitcoin only and really sets them apart from the competition. And then the last piece is just really looking at how can I do like a bulk shipment. So I'm working with some meetups that are around the country and figuring out, you know, if there's a way to get pre-orders from their members and then send in a bulk box at a discount so that, again, they can have good fresh coffee as well.
If you were to start this all over again, you mentioned you've been doing this for about a year and a half now. What would you be doing differently? What lessons have you learned along the way that you go, you know what, that was a mistake, or I should have done this earlier, or I should have doubled down here?
Yeah, you know, I think the loyalty program is something that, you know, it's going to help out a ton. But at the end of the day, it is it's something you have to have a following for to begin with, right? So you can't just start off right off the bat and have a loyalty program because you just started. So what you really need to do is build up a good clientele base. Outside of that, there, you know, very early on, and this is going to be embarrassing, but, you know, I was setting up my on-chain wallet and I used the BIP39 passphrase and I was going back and forth with two computers synchronizing my password manager. And so I have everything on steel from a on-chain, you know, standpoint with the seed words, but the BIP39 I had in the password manager separate from that. But I did a couple transactions and I tried to send to do, you know, the right thing. And for whatever reason, the password was gone. So that's one thing I would never, ever do again is forget your BIP39. But from a business standpoint, there's not a whole lot really that I would do differently at this point. So far, it's knock on wood, it's been a great experience overall. Everybody's been super supportive, and you know, I think I don't have a whole lot of regrets in terms of what I've done differently.
Any other messages you'd like to share with other entrepreneurs building Bitcoin businesses in this space for how they can either, you mentioned if you're looking to get started, it's really just do it, go out and start. But if they're already started and they're kind of looking to accelerate their business, or kind of like pick up steam and turn it into a full-time thing, what final words do you have for them?
Yeah, you know, I think the biggest thing is start small, fail fast, and go from there, but know that it's a long-term play, right? That to be in Bitcoin, you have to have a low time preference. And so ideally, if someone's accepting credit cards, and a very simple way in my mind that they could move over to a Bitcoin standard, at least for some of their purchases, is to just get rid of that credit card fee. You know, like Ben does, he accepts fiat and credit card and things like that. But at the end of the day, if you accept Bitcoin, all of a sudden you're 3% higher. So what you could do realistically is accept the Bitcoin at a 3% premium over what you would actually receive and net on a credit card transaction. Sell it minus the 3% that you would have lost anyway. Put that into a wallet. Take ownership of that. And then wait 5 years, right? And do that for every single transaction that you do via Bitcoin, and look back after 2 or 3 years and smile, because one, you saved the money from the credit card fees that was just going to MasterCard, Visa, American Express. And number two, 5 years from now, I guarantee it's higher than what it was whenever they accepted it. So that's one way to do it where there's very minimal risk financially, but at the same time, there's a ton of upside, right? You want to get that inverse opportunity to really get something from nothing, really.
Well, I think this is really cool what you're doing. I love to see so many people in the Bitcoin ecosystem building first businesses, but then being so focused on their craft. And I can see it in when we speak here. I haven't tried it myself, of course, having never had coffee before, but maybe I will in the future. You never know. And I see the same thing happening with some of the other folks who have been on this show. Again, Ben with his wine. I recently had on Margie Ramos, does the tallow kind of skincare stuff. Tried them both. Incredible. And I think it's cool that there's probably a flywheel spinning among Bitcoin because we have this low time preference from understanding Bitcoin. I think a lot of that translates over into the actual business, and it allows these business owners, yourself and others, to really focus on your craft, develop a long-term relationship with the customer, and build a superior product. that ultimately gets more people to funnel into Bitcoin because you're accepting Bitcoin. So right. I think that's really cool. And I'm glad to see you building this. And final words from me is just keep on stacking sats.
Yeah, absolutely. And whenever you were kind of closing down there, it actually reminded me one other thing is, you know, one of the reasons I got into this was Bitcoin Hat Guy, if you're familiar with him. But, you know, I mean, you got hats he's been producing. He's an OG that's been around there forever. So before I started the business, I actually bought a hat from him and I was like, why can't I do this with something else? So it's to your point, it's a flywheel. It's starting to spin. As price continues to go up over time, that'll continue to spin faster. Stack as many sats as you can, as long as you can. And yeah, feel free to reach out if anybody has questions.
Yeah, where can listeners go to learn more about you and Satoshi Coffee?
Yeah, our website is sats.coffee, sats.coffee. And I'm Sats Coffee on Twitter, Noster, pretty much all the social media sites, Instagram, although the majority of my time is on Noster and X. So,
awesome. Thanks again for taking the time and keep on stacking sats.
Sounds great. Thanks.